Oh boy, for the next 3 hours, we have Stuart Rhodes with us, and this is going to be a wonderful discourse. I urge you to, after we take this short little break, get yourself a little something to sip on, a little tea, a little something. Make yourselves comfortable and get ready, because this interview is going to, well, to use the parlance of the prehistoric era, totally rock. This is Coast to Coast AM. Stuart Rhodes, I mentioned earlier, is the founder and president of Oath Keepers. He graduated summa cum laude from the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, where his honor thesis focused on the political theory of James Madison. While attending UNLV, he taught rape prevention and street crime survival as a volunteer instructor for the UNLV Jean Nedich Women's Center. He also works as a professional sculptor, so he's an artist as well, and as a Nevada State Certified Concealed Carry Firearms instructor. He worked on Ron Paul's D.C. staff. He graduated from Yale Law School in 2004, and that's not a real easy place to get a degree from, where his paper, Solving the Puzzle of Enemy Combatant Status, won Yale's Judge William E. Miller Prize for the best paper on the Bill of Rights. He assisted teaching U.S. military history at Yale's History Department, was a Yale research scholar, and is now writing a book on the dangers of applying the laws of war to the American people. A timely work, I might add. Welcome, Stuart. I've been looking forward to talking to you for a long time. Well, where should we start with this? It looks to me like we have a storm riding up our 6 o'clock position.
Absolutely, and ever since 9/11 especially, it's been accelerating. There's been a methodical and very much intentional destruction of the Bill of Rights, all in the name of national security. And the NDAA, this is the most recent nail in the coffin of the Bill of Rights.
You know, the Southern Poverty Law Center doesn't like you very much.
Yeah. No, they really don't. And the reason is that we're messing with their muscle. Southern Poverty Law Center is now actually part of DHS's propaganda machine. The CEO for Southern Poverty Law Center now sits on the DHS working panel for countering violent extremism. And so they're helping to write the training manuals and helping to direct the focus of DHS. And increasingly, it's being focused on veterans and on constitutionalists, on Ron Paul supporters, Chuck Baldwin supporters, on anybody who will stand up for the Constitution.
Stuart, let me ask you something. If all of law enforcement is put under the control of Department of Homeland Security, which I perceive there is some sort of a concerted effort to do this, wouldn't that make for our very own little KGB?
Well, actually, it's a direct parallel what happened in Germany. Immediately after the Nazis took power, what they did is they put the command of the local law enforcement under the SS, and so they nationalized and federalized. They nationalized their local police departments, and that's what's happening here, the same exact thing. And yes, you're right. It's what they would wind up being is for the most part, the local eyes and ears and enforcement mechanism for the politicized DHS. DHS is already politicized. It's already gone far beyond stopping, you know, radical extremist violence or terrorism, Islamic terrorism. It's now going after your political opponents.
Why did you found Oath Keepers? It seems to me you really have put yourself, I mean, this is noble and very patriotic, but a man putting himself in this position is way out on the clothesline. Why did you do this, and when did you do it?
I founded Oath Keepers in 2009, but the idea for it came to me during the campaign. During the 2008 campaign, I was campaigning for Ron Paul in Nevada. And when it was clear that he wasn't going to win the nomination for the Republican Party, I realized that no matter who was put in power, who was going to be the next president, whether it was going to be McCain or Obama or Hillary, we didn't know at the time, but it didn't matter because all of them are oath breakers. All of them have already demonstrated their contempt for the Constitution. And I think it's been proven out. John McCain is the one who wrote the NDAA 2012, which contains these atrocious totalitarian provisions. And Obama has gone far beyond even what Bush did and has begun to kill American citizens that he has on a secret list, of his secret snuff list of those he considered to be enemies in wartime. And so I knew that. I could already see back in 2004, I wrote a paper at Yale Law School about this idea that the president can treat Americans exactly the same as somebody in conquered Iraq or Afghanistan and apply the laws of war to them. I could already see that claim coming, and I knew where we were going. And so I thought to myself, well, if the politicians have abandoned the Constitution And the judges also, for the most part, have abandoned the Constitution to what's left. And my conclusion was, I need to appeal to the men who will be given the orders, appeal to the guys with the guns, to make them understand that their oath, they all took an oath to support and defend the Constitution, just like I did when I served as a paratrooper. And so I'm going for the men who still have honor and still have courage, but who might be lacking in knowledge. You know, that the lawyers and the judges and the politicians in D.C. know exactly what they're doing. So they have the knowledge, but they have no integrity and no courage. And so let's focus on the guys that do have integrity and courage and give them the knowledge they need to know what's right. They know what's right, they'll do what's right.
Stuart Rhodes, I say that because I want everybody to know who you are. And I really like when say, hi, John Wells, you know. But anyway, this is Stuart Rhodes. And I guess what I want to ask you is, why are they doing this? I mean, what is this direct, this, wait a second, before we go there, let's do something together here, and that is, let's qualify this. In your opinion, why is it that someone who wants to stand up for the Constitution is immediately branded some sort of a hate monger? Could we just address that before we get into the rest of these questions?
Well, because they won't directly attack or confront what I'm actually doing. And so they have to attack me through manufactured smear, like trying to artificially associate me with white supremacists, even though I'm a quarter Mexican and part Indian. You know, it's absurd. But that's the only way they can fight me. They have to try to make me something that I'm not, into a straw man they can knock down. Because all I'm talking about is simply doing what the founders intended, which is to honor the oath to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And we don't ask the current Syrian military to use violence. We simply say, look, just simply refuse to be a tool of oppression over your own people. Refuse the orders. And that's, even that is so offensive to these people, because they think that once they gain political power and once they've managed to pack the courts with like-minded judges, they think that once they've done that, the military and police, they look at them as pawns on a chessboard, and they figure that all of those lowly pawns belong to them once they seize political power. But what we're doing is saying we're going right to the source of their supposed power, right to the men with the guns, who they take for granted as being just simple tools and dumb animals, as Kissinger called them. But we're going to them and saying, you're not a dumb animal, you're not an obedient robot, you have a mind of your own, and you're supposed to use it. You're supposed to judge the constitutionality, the lawfulness of every one of your orders. And the military is taught this in the context of the laws of war. They're taught what are lawful and unlawful orders. Problem is, though, they're not taught the Constitution, not what they should be. And so when it comes to, like during Hurricane Katrina, where you had disarmament of everyday Americans trying to defend themselves, you had house-to-house searches and gun disarmament, in a situation like that, what they're used here domestically, they are running right up against our Constitution and right up against the Bill of Rights, which protects our rights. And so if they don't know and understand what those rules are, they're more likely to go along with unconstitutional orders, just like they did in Katrina.
You know, I should probably mention, although, yeah, I think I will. We're getting dropouts all over the country. I have emails coming in here from all over the country saying, we're losing a minute here, and we're losing several minutes there, and the signal just dropped and so forth. I don't know if it's deliberate or not, but I notice whenever we have a controversial show on, I hate to use the word show because you can't see anything, but let's just cover as much as we possibly can. Now, the guns, they're preoccupied with the guns. You wanted to get to the guys with the guns and say, listen, the Constitution comes first. Go by the Constitution. Be judicious in your use of the guns. CDC has just taken homicide off the top 15 causes of death in the United States because people have bought, as Neo said, guns, lots of guns, and they're defending themselves. And this goes back to the Katrina situation where Sergeant Joshua May of the Utah National Guard, his whole unit refused to confiscate guns during Katrina, and that was going on. There was gun confiscation going on during that disaster, yes?
That's right, and that's one of the good stories came out of that. A lot of the very depressing, reality and truth you have to face is that there were people who obeyed unconstitutional orders during Katrina, but there were also those who did understand the Constitution. And that's a really good example, because there you had one man, because one man who understood the Constitution was in the right place And he had been talking to his fellow soldiers about the Constitution and especially about the right to bear arms, because he had already sown that field, laid that ground. When it came time for them to make a decision about following orders that were unlawful, he was right there. He was the go-to guy, and they followed his lead. And in fact, the officers in his unit asked him, even though he was just an NCO, they asked him to go to the commander and express their resolve that they will not participate in any gun confiscation, which they knew was going on. On the way there, they heard about it. They knew it was happening. And so he went up, and they did basically a peremptory refusal, which is really interesting because they didn't wait for the orders to come down. They let it be known ahead of time that they would not follow these orders. And this is an important point. You have to think about it in advance, be ready to do it before it comes down, before you're under the gun, before you're in the heat of the moment. Make your decisions in advance, and you're much more likely to be resolute. But I think it's a good idea also to do a preemptive refusal like that. And that's what we're encouraging the military right now to do in response to the NDAA, is to stand up and say, this is unlawful, this is totally unconstitutional, and it's null and void from inception. We will not obey any such orders. And in fact, if you look at the Declaration of 10 Orders that we put out, the orders we will not obey that we published in 2009, number three is we will not obey orders to detain American citizens as unlawful combatants or subject them to military tribunal. So already we knew this was coming. And that's an important point to make, is that this is not something that came out of the blue. This is a pattern of behavior, especially since 9/11, with a relentless push to impose upon the American people the laws of war, precisely the same as it was done in Iraq or Afghanistan. No difference. The claim is that the president, pursuant to his powers as commander-in-chief in wartime, can use military force, that means killing, military detention, military trial, or even extraordinary rendition against American citizens and lawful residents, just like he does in Iraq or Afghanistan against foreigners. And he has been doing it. The Bush administration, they detained two American citizens as unlawful combatants. One was Jose Padilla, the other one was named Yasser Hamdi, and both were detained for years without a grand jury indictment, without a trial in the military system. And then Obama has gone, you know, one step better than that. He has begun to kill Americans that he considers to be the enemy. And now Congress has agreed to this and said, yes, we approve of this. That's what we meant when we gave authorization for use of military force back in 2001. We meant that that would include, you know, indefinite military detention without trial or trial by tribunal or even extraordinary rendition. It means turning you over to a foreign country or to some foreign entity. And now Congress has given its full support and assent to this idea that the president, as commander-in-chief, is essentially an elected dictator. Because you look back through history, whether it's Hitler or Mussolini or Stalin or Pol Pot or any of these dictators throughout history, the common denominator is that the dictator can just point his finger at any person in the country, among his own people, point his finger at them and have them disappear, have them killed, have them interned, have them tried before a show trial like happened in Stalinist Russia. All of that's very consistent with exactly what is done in a dictatorship. And so I would challenge anybody out there to explain to me what is different now about the powers that are being held, or the claimed powers that are being held by Obama and someone like Mussolini or Pol Pot or Hitler or Papa Doc. I mean, you name the dictator throughout history, it's the same claim of absolute power.
Stuart, you know, I'm surprised I haven't gotten slammed so far with an accusation that that I'm just a right leaning, you know, right. You know, I don't know. I don't want to say redneck because some of my best friends are rednecks, frankly. But here's the thing: just to show everybody that this is not just an anti-Obama thing. How did George Bush resurrect what the Supreme Court had ruled back in 1866 to be unconstitutional, and this was George W. Bush.
That's right, and this is not a left-right issue. That's an important point to make. This is not about the left or right. It's about the Bill of Rights, and it cuts across all political lines. This is about what we are as Americans. You know, without the Bill of Rights, there is no United States. But like you said, back in 1866, in Ex parte Milligan, the Supreme Court of the United States had ruled that what Lincoln had done during the Civil War to northern civilians was unconstitutional. Lincoln had detained over 15,000 northerners. We're talking, not talking about southerners who'd broken away and formed their own country. We're talking about northern civilians, not people in the Union Army, not people who were, you know, a foreigner in wartime, but just civilians who were criticizing the president or were opposed to the war. He interned 15,000 of them in military detention. And then about 5,000 of those people were tried by military tribunal. And one of those was Mr. Milligan, who had been a citizen of Indiana, a civilian, who was accused of violating the laws of war. He was accused of plotting to set Southern prisoners free and plotting to raid an armory and arm an insurrection against the governor of Indiana. And so he was tried by a military tribunal under Lincoln and convicted and sentenced to be executed. And he appealed to the Supreme Court. And it was fortunate for him that his appeal reached the Supreme Court after the war was over, because courts tend to be very deferential to war powers during a conflict. It's only afterwards that they calm back down. It's part of human nature. So in the argument before the court, the lawyers for the government argued that this is war, the Bill of Rights are peacetime provisions only. So that was their argument, and that they don't have any effect or limitation upon the president, on the powers of the president, pursuant to his role as commander-in-chief. And they argued that he could be tried by tribunal, and even if the tribunal does not have jurisdiction, that he could be detained in addition to the conflict as a prisoner of war. And I'll quote you right now. It says, finally, if the military tribunal has no jurisdiction, the petitioner held as a prisoner of war, aiding with arms the enemies of the United States, and held under the authority of the United States until the war terminates, then to be held, handed over by the military to the civil authorities to be tried for his crimes. So that was their argument, is that the laws of war governed even northern civilians. The court rejected this argument and said it doesn't matter what he's charged with. It doesn't make a difference what he's accused of doing. And here's the quote from the court. No usage of war could sanction a military trial for any offense whatever of a citizen in civil life, in no wise connected with the military service. Congress could grant no such power, and to the honor of our national legislature, be it said, has never been provoked by the state of the country even to attempt its exercise. One of the plainest constitutional provisions was therefore infringed when Milligan was tried by a court not ordained and established by Congress and not composed of judges appointed during good behavior. And what they were referring to is the very plain and direct part of the Constitution that applies to that situation, and that is Article 3. And Article 3 of the Constitution says, first of all, in Section 2, the trial of all crimes, except in cases of impeachment, shall be by jury. And then the very next sections in Article 3, Section 3, states that treason against the United States shall consist only in levying war against them or in adhering to their enemies, giving them aid and effort. So it defines the crime of treason right there in Article 3 itself. And then it says, and no person shall be convicted for treason unless on the testimony of two witnesses to the same overt act or on confession in open court. And so what the founders did right there is they knew that the charge of treason is the worst thing you can accuse anybody of. And they made sure that it was not simply you're speaking out against the government. It had to be an action. And they made sure that you had to have two witnesses, not just one and not some secret witness, but two witnesses to the same overt act. So extra procedural protections, extra evidence that the government must bring. This is no place else in our criminal code is this requirement. They don't require you to have two witnesses for other crimes, only for treason or confession in open court. And what they were trying to prevent then with confession in open court was the history they already knew from the Star Chamber in England, where you had coerced confessions. You had people tortured until they confessed, and then that was used against them to prosecute and convict them. So this is what the Supreme Court of the United States, Ex parte Milligan, was looking at. One of the plainest provisions in the Constitution is right there in Article 3. That is what you do with an American accused of making war against his own country or aiding the enemy. You must try them for treason. And it must be before a jury of their peers in a civilian court, in an Article 3 court. And so that is so by ruling that, by rejecting the idea that you can apply the laws of war to American citizens,
All right. We're going to have to take a little 2-minute break here and then a little one after that and a little message. Maybe even a big message. We'll discuss how much bigger this thing could get on Coast to Coast AM. Thank you, Ross Mitchell. Well, we're getting complaints from all over the country about dropouts and this and that and the other. That always happens when we have a controversial show. And so, no, we're not doing it on purpose to sell subscriptions to the Coast Insider, but I'm telling you, it would be a good thing for you to do because, well, let's say you have to go to sleep in an hour. You don't want to miss it, and you get 1,000 shows, 3 years, over 1,000 shows, 3 years of archived programs, and you can listen to them at your leisure. And there are no dropouts, which are being experienced all over the country on really big powerhouse stations, and we don't know why. LA Command is looking into it right at the moment. We do not know why. Maybe the spooks are after us, you think? Maybe. We're going to come back with Stuart Rhodes, founder of Oath Keepers, in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, well, apparently this reception problem is something in the terrestrial apparatus because a listener just informed me that it's coming in very nicely over XM. Whereas we like to say our various pipelines are AM, FM, XM, and Internet. Our management is a little bit worried because I'm sitting in the chair with you tonight. John B. Wells in with Stuart Rhodes tonight. Let's get into some more. Personally, I don't see, with all the controversy that has swirled around over the last 3 years, going into the fourth one now, that this person who is currently in the office, President Obama, I do not believe that he's going to be in there again for another term, although I could be wrong, but I don't see it right at this moment. Do you anticipate more damage and assault on the Constitution between now and get out of here day?
Well, I don't think it matters. Unfortunately, it doesn't make a difference who is, I mean, unless it's Ron Paul, whether it's John McCain or whether it's Obama. I mean, John McCain just wrote this bill. He wants this. He wants all of it. He wants the laws of war to be applied to American citizens. You know, he said so himself on the Senate floor, but he wrote that in conjunction with Carl Levin. And it was with the full support of Lindsey Graham, who was like a cheerleader on the floor of the Senate, saying yes, you know, and Ayo from Massachusetts. It doesn't make a difference. That's the sad thing, is that it doesn't matter whether it's the puppet on the left or the puppet on the right. They will do the same thing when they're in office, with a rare exception of someone like Congressman Paul, who is a real constitutionalist. And so, like I said, that's why I started the Oath Keepers. I knew this was coming. I could see the handwriting on the wall long before, you know, back in 2004, and this is the march, the same march that Germany went down with the Reichstag fire. Like, I just interviewed a lady in Kansas who survived Germany as a young girl, and she said what's happening now is exactly what she saw happen then, and the same thing from a gentleman who had lived through the Soviet Union. He said the same thing again. And so in Germany, right after they had the Reichstag, their parliament, burned to the ground, they passed what they call the Reichstag fire decree, 1933. And what that did is suspended major provisions in the German Constitution. Unfortunately, the Germans had a very flawed constitution that allowed for this, but the Reich President Hindenburg suspended freedom of speech, freedom of press, freedom of assembly, the normal due process rights you would have for any crimes, and all of that was thrown out of the window in the name of emergency. And then right out on the heels of that, a month later, came the Enabling Act, which combined with those two things made Hitler a dictator. And it was all done very legally. It's an important point for the listeners to understand, is many times throughout history, the dictatorship comes legally, or at least, you know, quote-unquote legally. And that's what's happening now to us. Both major parties, both the Republicans and the Democrats, are in league together. It's a bipartisan assault on the Constitution and on the Bill of Rights. The modern, the most recent acceleration, this is going on for many decades, but the most recent acceleration came after 9/11 with the bipartisan Patriot Act, and then, of course, the bipartisan assault on the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, which is the law of war being applied to Americans. Bush did it. It was championed and cheered by conservatives. And then when Obama got a hold of it, he didn't renounce any of these powers, any of these claimed powers. In fact, he did what Bush won better. He went all the way and began to kill Americans. In a paper I wrote back in 2004 at Yale, which won Yale's prize for best paper on the Bill of Rights, I said, look, if you can apply the laws of war to American citizens and detain them as though they were a POW, do to a foreign enemy under the laws of war. And as anybody who's ever been in the military knows, one of the things you can do to an enemy during warfare is simply kill them on sight. And they don't have to have a gun in their hand. It could be the radio operator. It could be the supply guy. It could be the person who drives the general's wife around. They're all considered military assets, and you can simply kill them on sight, like a sniper would do, or using a Hellfire missile. And so I knew this was going to eventually come to pass, and now it has. Obama has begun to kill American citizens. He killed Alawaki and also Alawaki's teenage son. And they were not in a combat zone, not that it would make a difference. They still were targeted as though they were foreign enemies. But the point is that they weren't even in a combat zone. They were, you know, someplace outside of Afghanistan or outside of Iraq. But the whole argument is the entire earth is a battleground, including the United States, and American citizens can be treated differently. As we just talked about a minute ago, the proper response to an American citizen who you think is making war against his own country or aiding the enemy is to capture them and try them for treason. Certainly while you're trying to capture them, if they shoot at you, you can defend yourself and shoot back. Just like a cop who's going to arrest somebody suspected of murder and defend himself. But the police, if they think you're a murderer, they don't just drive by you on the street and shoot you in the head. That's laws of war. There's a major difference. Police will capture you, bring you back for trial for a crime like murder. And you have to be, you know, go through a grand jury indictment, and then you'll face a jury of your own peers. And this is an important point for people to understand, is that we're talking about here is the right to jury trial. And people might think to themselves, well, whether it's a jury or a judge, who cares? Well, the founders cared very much. In fact, denial of jury trial, violation of the right to jury trial, was one of the causes for taking up arms in the American Revolution. If you go look at the Declaration of Independence, it says right there, he has in many cases, this is the charges against the king, they said he has in many cases denied us the right to trial by jury. And also another charge against the king was he has attempted to make military power superior to the civil power. And what we're facing right now is a direct parallel to what was done. And again, that was done by statutes. Parliament passed statutes that expanded the courts of admiralty, the jurisdiction of the courts of admiralty, as one of the ways to strip away jury trial, because they knew a notorious smuggler like John Hancock, for example, would never be tried by a jury of his peers and found guilty in Boston because he was a very popular patriot. They liked the fact that he was smuggling and circumventing the customs laws of England. And so they knew they couldn't reach him through normal criminal procedure. And so they created the second track, and they did it by law. And the same thing happened in Germany. They created a second track to go after political opponents of the regime. And so that's what happens throughout history. It's happening right now in America, in modern America, a second track. What that means is that for normal crimes, you'll get a normal trial. But if you're accused of being an enemy of the state, then you'll be taken away to a separate system. And that's what happened back in the founders' era through the parliament passing statutes to strip away jury trial rights and expand the jurisdiction of the courts of admiralty. That's what happened in Germany, which with the creation of what they called the people's courts, which were packed with Nazis. And it's a special court, a special trial system for political opponents. And that's what happens under the laws of war. In Iraq right now, for example, or Afghanistan, a goat herder in Afghanistan, if he's accused of stealing his neighbor's goat, he'll get a normal trial of whatever kind of trial an Afghan would get. But if the U.S. military thinks that he's part of the insurrection, or I mean part of the resistance, or supporting the resistance, if they think he's an insurgent, what do? They don't go to a court before they go get him. They just go get him. And so what they're claiming is that system there can be used against Americans. Because the United States Constitution does not have an escape clause for the government to suspend the Constitution during emergencies, what they're doing is they're making one up. They're creating one out of the laws of war. They're taking what would be used only on foreigners, never against your own people, that kind of power. And they're taking that and bringing it home and saying that this wipes away the Bill of Rights, this trumps everything else. And that's what they're doing. And that's their second track. And it's being, you know, it's being done by both parties. And so I don't think it's going to make a difference in the long run which one is there. It's kind of a lesser of two evils arguments, right? If you're taking 80% poison in order to avoid what you think is 100% poison, you're still poisoning yourself. And so I think if they were to elect someone like Romney, who just said he would have signed the NDAA, but he says, but trust me, I'm a good person. You know, he's saying the same thing Obama's saying. Obama signed it into law, even though it's vastly unconstitutional. But he said, oh, but I have reservations about this, and don't worry, I won't use it. So they're now breaking away from, they're tearing us away from the concept of a limited government that's bound down by the chains of the Constitution. And instead, they're saying, trust me, I'm a good guy. So I'll be an elected dictator, but that's okay, because I'm a nice guy and I won't misuse this power. I promise. That's where we are. And both parties are saying the same thing.
Well, you know, I'm sure baby Hitler was probably a really cute kid.
Exactly. But
you know what I mean?
And he might have been well initially. Who knows?
Yeah, he might have been a really nice kid. Might have enjoyed playing with him on the playground, you know, sneaking a cigarette or something, being bad. Little baby Hitler. Well, here's the thing. You know that whole, let's talk Nazi here for just a second. You know, that 1968 Gun Control Act, there's a very compelling argument that the 1968 Gun Control Act was drafted directly from, in parts, but I repeat the word directly, from the 1938. It provided a direct model for the 68 Gun Control Act in the United States. It was built. The Nazi law was built on previous gun control laws passed during the Weimar period, and blah blah blah. Now, some information has surfaced recently that the stage is being pressure from the United Nations to disarm the citizens of the U.S. Do you see that coming down the road?
Well, certainly. I mean, like I said, it's a full spectrum assault against every provision in the Bill of Rights. But I don't want people to be so focused on guns. This is one of the problems with many conservatives. I mean, I was a firearms instructor. I'm a very hardcore gun advocate and defender. I was a good friend of Aaron Zellman of JPFO, which is the organization, you know, the Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership, that did the research you're just talking about. So I'm a very staunch Second Amendment protector. But the problem is so many conservatives out there, so many people that self-identify on the political right, are very much on their guard when it comes to the Second Amendment, but they don't pay attention to the Fourth, Fifth, and Sixth, not like they should. And especially after 9/11, they were all too willing to cheer. Like look at the Patriot Act. It allows for the FBI to write their own search warrants, called national security letters. It's an absurdity. That is exactly the same kind of abuse that the founders rebelled against. Back in their day, they were called writs of assistance, general search warrants that did not require a showing of probable cause to a judge, did not specify the people, places, and things to be searched or seized. They experienced that. That's why they wrote the Fourth Amendment, to stop it. But yet, post 9/11, in the anger and the fear of a mass terrorist attack like that, you had many, especially on the political right, who were fully happy with tearing down the due process rights of accused, tearing down the requirements of warrants, all of that in the name of national security. And so I would encourage people out there, if you want to be you must be a consistent constitutionalist. All of the Bill of Rights for all Americans, as JPFO, as Aaron Zellman always put it, he's right. You have to be consistent. And so, yes, it's important. And yes, that's like number one on our list of orders we will not obey is we will not obey orders to disarm the American people. Because we saw it during Katrina, but even more importantly than that, we know that that was the cause of our own revolution. If they had experienced a long train of abuses, when they came for their guns, they understood that they must fight back. And I agree with that. You can never let yourself be disarmed. Disarmament is the precursor to genocide. It is the precursor to slavery. You cannot let yourself be disarmed. But you also can't let yourself be subject to being assassinated, to being black bagged and taken away in the middle of the night to places unknown, having your family end of them. You can't allow yourself to be subjected to some kangaroo court of a trial in front of some military judge. And that was the point I was trying to make with the jury, is the founders, in their wisdom, under our system, government cannot take your life or your liberty away from you. Only a jury of your fellow Americans, only a jury of your peers in your local community, in your state, can do that. So the power of life and death over you is not held by the government. It's held by your fellow Americans. And that's the way the founders intended it, just like they intended that the military power in this country would be in the hands of the people in the form of the militia, not a massive standing army. They wanted you and I to be our own security, because they understood that that was the answer. answer to that ancient question of who shall guard the guardians. They want us to be our own guardians, our own military power. And the same goes for law enforcement. The law enforcement power in the community is in the hands of the people. You have a sheriff, but he's backed up by the posse. And that is the world they lived in. That's the world that they understood as being free. And I think they were right. You give up those responsibilities at a price. Nothing is free. So when you advocate the responsibility to be your own security, both in the military context and in the law enforcement context, then you'll be less free. And if you allow the government to also take away your responsibility to sit in judgment over your fellow Americans, and instead they have some military judge do it, or even some federal judge, that's not their job. Their job is to preside over the trials, because it's the job of the people themselves to decide life and death. All of those powers belong in the hands of the people under our Constitution, and we have allowed them to be taken away from us one by one. And the right to bear arms is tied in with the responsibility of being the militia. And the right to jury trial is tied in with the responsibility of sitting on the jury. When you're called for jury service, you better go. It's your duty to go and sit in that position. Because if you advocate that to professional judges, you will wind up with the same kind of abuse and tyranny that our forefathers fled from around the world. I have family that came from all over the world, and they came here for freedom. And if we let this system that the founders gave us, if you let it be torn away, all that our forefathers fought and died for will be for nothing. And we'll be just like everywhere else in the world, even worse. We'll be like a third world tin hat dictatorship. And that's what they're trying to do to us right now.
You know, this is really very disturbing. First of all, I just want to mention this. I don't know of any other program, radio or video, with this kind of reach that can have this length a conversation about this subject. The mainstream media will not touch it. Somehow these organizations continue to be funded, with the advertisers still buy time on those programs, and consumers still buy those products, and so forth. And of course, every radio show host I've ever heard will say, "Oh no, I don't advocate any boycotts or anything." But this is the thing that's really frightening. I'm not a policymaker. I'm not a politician. I'm not running for office. I'm just a radio. It's like I've told our many friends on Coast to Coast a few times. I'm just like you. I have the microphone. You have the receiver. Neither one is very good without the other. So here we are. The thing is that this isn't just fodder for a radio show. This is really happening. This is really happening in our time. And to use this really worn out analogy, we really are like the frog in the cool water sitting on the stove, and the heat is being turned up very, very gradually, and we're about to boil. And I just don't know. We've only got a couple of minutes here, so if you give me an answer to this question, in fact, let's hold it over until after the little break at the top of the hour. But here's the thing. All of these people who are running for office, makes no difference whether they're Democrats or they're Republicans. Makes no difference whatsoever. All of them, with the exception of Ron Paul, have supported the Patriot Act and the NDAA, and I do not understand this. Do you?
No, I don't, and I have to excuse it away as being either, it's either ignorance or it's willing and knowing treason. You know, they're either traitors or they're useful idiots, and I don't know what else to say.
Okay. Well, let's, well, there it is then. So in the end, ladies and gentlemen, it comes down to us. If we consider our vote to be a meaningless joke, then we won't go to the polls. If we consider our government too big, too screwed up, and too far down the road, and too monstrous to do anything about, will we just not fight it? Look, as long as I've got this microphone, for as long as I have it, and this could be the last show, you just never know. Participate while you can. Learn while you can, because a day will come when we won't be able to open a microphone and talk about any of this without fear of rendition. We'll come back with the founder of Oath Keepers, Stuart Rhodes, when we return. This is the Mothership, Coast to Coast AM.